It's 8 o'clock. This is KVNF Regional News for Wednesday, August 26th. I'm Patricia Naft. A program to provide long-acting reversible contraceptives to low-income women has been funded for another year. Several foundations in the state have stepped up to provide money after it ran out earlier this summer. Benta Berklin has more from the state capitol.
Family planning clinics across the state provided the intrauterine devices at no cost to low-income women ranging in age from 15 to 24. A private grant had been funding the program for the last 5 years. Larry Wolk heads the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment and says he hopes eventually the state will foot the bill.
We've made the case for public funding because there is a public return on investment. We're approaching a 50% reduction in both the unintended teen pregnancy rate as well as the abortion rate.
But last legislative session, state lawmakers didn't agree to fund the program despite bipartisan support. More than a dozen, mostly health organizations, have now agreed to fund it for another year. Funding past that point is up in the air. I'm Benta Berklund at the state capitol.
Shooters at a public range sparked a wildfire burning in Grand County. The blaze started Monday at Byers Canyon Rifle Range, a Colorado Parks and Wildlife facility. Noel Curran is with Grand County Office of Emergency Management.
It was a private party using .223 full metal jacket ammunition, which is legal and allowed out at that range. The ammunition did spark the blaze.
As of yesterday evening, the fire burned about 600 acres and was 60% contained. Curran says local crews are fighting it with the help of a 20-person hand crew from Meeker and air support from Grand Junction. CPW has closed the rifle range 4 miles west of Hot Sulphur Springs until further notice. Silverton and San Juan County want federal aid to clean up mine waste in the Animas River Basin. The Town Board of Trustees and County Commissioners approved a joint resolution. It calls for collaborating with other communities in the basin to request federal funds. The decision comes after the August 5th Gold King mine spill that sent 3 million gallons of contaminated water into the Animas River and downstream waterways. Schools across the Western Slope are opening their doors as summer vacation comes to a close. Districts are counting how many students enrolled this year, and some are doing better than others. KPNF's Jake Ryan has more.
Yesterday was the first day of school in Lake City.
First day of school. We're so excited.
That's Leslie Nichols, the superintendent of the Hinsdale School District and principal of the Lake City Community Schools. One of the reasons she's so excited is that the current enrollment is at 111 students, a record for the 139-year-old school district.
It feels great right now to have growth in enrollment.
111 is a nice bump. For the past few years, they've been around 80 or 90 students, and this increase wasn't really expected. And when school funding is directly tied to the number of students, that's always welcome news. The preliminary numbers in Montrose County, over on the West End, are looking good, too. 289 students.
We're still a long way from October count, but we hope that our enrollment count can stabilize at that 289.
That's Mike Epright, the superintendent for the West End Public Schools. Like Hinsdale County, his district has seen an increase in students, but for Epright, it's more of a reprieve than an unexpected bonus.
It's one of those things that kind of gives you a breath of relief to know that there could be some stability. There's a chance that things are going to move in a positive direction.
His district has seen declining enrollment for years. This year looks like the first in a long time where the decline is stopping. The district has had to draw from its savings to prevent cuts, and this year they'll have to do it again, but not quite as much. Epright says that it seems like this region is stabilizing, that the people in the West End who need jobs have them. He hopes more people in the future move to Nucla, Paradox, and Naterita. Back in Lake City, Nichols has been asking the new families that moved there why they moved there, and answers vary. Some families came to work for the electrical company, some at a restaurant. Without a driving force, though, a grand reason, enthusiasm, even in Lake City, has to be kept in check.
What will I be saying a year from now? What will our numbers look like? It's really hard to say. You know, in a year, we could have a significant decline in our enrollment just because of family mobility, when one or two families moves in or out here, we just feel the ripples pretty heavily.
For KVNF, I'm Jake Ryan.
As a member of the American public, you own coal. Yes, coal. The black rock we burn for electricity, many of the country's biggest coal deposits are on federal land, land that belongs to the American public. So when companies mine that coal, they make payments called royalties to the federal government and to the states. Those royalty payments, which many say are far too low, are at the heart of a conflict that pits coal against climate. Inside Energy's Lee Patterson reports.
The pre-hearing rally began under a bright white tent in Gillette, a town deep in Wyoming's coal country.
We have folks from Alpha Coal West, from Marsh Coal, and the Thunder Basin Coal Company. Give yourselves a hand.
That's Travis Detai from the Wyoming Mining Association, the sponsor of the so-called Stop New Energy Taxes rally. It was a warm-up act for the main event at the local library.
Hi, everyone. It's great to be in Wyoming.
Janice Schneider with the Department of the Interior welcomed the crowd to a listening session
about how the Bureau of Land Management can best manage its coal resources.
40% of America's coal is on federal land. Under the current system, critics say coal companies often pay less, sometimes far less, in royalties than the required 12.5%. Hundreds showed up, including Wyoming's governor and the state's entire Washington, D.C. delegation. Senator John Barrasso was one of the first to speak.
I find it extremely hypocritical for the administration to ask whether it's getting a fair return on federal coal when it's gone to such length to suppress the demand for coal.
Barrasso gets at the root cause of the frustration expressed by so many at this meeting and at similar hearings across the country this summer. It all comes down to this. Coal miners are fighting for jobs, many of which are enabled by the federal coal program. But those jobs are threatened in part by new climate regulations. A possible hike in royalties is seen as yet another threat.
What you're proposing will be devastating to our community, to our kids, and to our families.
And pardon me, please, if I seem a little nervous and uneasy. You know, my livelihood does lie in the balance here.
We don't want to be forced onto welfare in Gillette. We want to work and pay our way through life without asking for government assistance.
That was Sherry England, coal miner J.J. Mendoza, and grandmother Penny Russell. The meeting became a platform for sounding off on everything happening in the coal industry right now. Layoffs, bankruptcies, decreased demand, and of course, one of the biggest factors of them all.
While discussing the economic impacts of coal is necessary, this conversation would be incomplete without acknowledging the basic scientific realities that the climate is changing.
That's Sam Pennington, a college student. During the entire four-hour meeting, there was almost no mention of the elephant in the room.
That we are responsible, and that coal is the number one contributor to climate change.
Colin Marshall is the CEO of Cloud Peak Energy, one of the largest coal companies in Wyoming. He agreed the conversation was incomplete.
If they said we'd just like the coal to stay in the ground because they were concerned about climate, I think they'd be being honest. Then you could have actually a discussion about climate change.
If royalty rates go up, that could keep more coal in the ground. That's an outcome high on the agenda for some groups like the Sierra Club that are pushing for reform. All this debate reveals a disconnect at the federal level between the federal coal program itself, which has produced around 5 billion tons of coal over the past decade, and the Obama administration's climate change agenda, aimed in part at burning less coal. Interior Secretary Sally Jewell acknowledged that tension during a speech earlier this year.
Coal is going to continue to be an important part of our nation's energy mix in the future. How do we manage the program in a way that's consistent with our climate change objectives?
It's a challenging question for lawmakers and regulators who are walking a fine line these days between supporting energy development and, in this case, thousands of coal jobs while continuing to battle climate change. For Inside Energy, I'm Lee Patterson.
That was Lee Patterson with Inside Energy. This story comes to us from Inside Energy, a public media collaboration focused on America's energy issues. For KVNF News, I'm Patricia Naft.